Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning and welcome back here to Faith Radio Mornings. This is hour two for the 9th of November. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault, talking about so many of the different news headlines of the day, as well as special interest topics, and certainly enjoyed the first hour. And recently joined by Dr. Gary Stratton, who talked a little bit about the snow that is falling outside in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. Certainly those of us in the Midwest are not, we are very familiar with the snow season. It seems like it's starting a bit earlier potentially this year for so many of us. And I asked Gary what we can see in the snow that might be hopeful and helpful, and he brought out the idea that as we look around at this fresh blanket of white snow, to remember God's forgiveness that is perpetual, that is always there and always available. And in the midst of our shortcomings and in the midst of our shortfalls, he does continue to heal us and to wash us so that we are actually whiter than snow. As Friday morning, our guest here at the first part of hour two is Adam Holtz, who is part of PluggedIn.com network. He does movie reviews, video game reviews, all things reviews in popular culture. We love having Adam on. And Adam, I see that there is some headlines coming up as Thanksgiving is just around the corner for us, that two turkeys from South Dakota will be pardoned by President Trump later this month. The news about the two turkeys raised near Huron was announced yesterday. The birds have yet to be named, and that's where the public comes in. People are being asked to name the turkeys from now through Sunday. Adam, are you more of a Thanksgiving guy? Are you more of a Christmas guy as we're heading into the holiday season? What's your take on this?
You know, it's hard to beat Christmas, Peter. I mean, turkey's great, but, you know, Jesus and, I'm going to just say it, presents and family, that Trump's Thanksgiving for me.
Yeah, well, you know, Thanksgiving is fine. If you had one thing at the Thanksgiving Day table that you said, this has got to be there or else it's actually not Thanksgiving. I know for some people it's sweet potatoes and marshmallows. Other people it's other stuff. What is absolutely Thanksgiving for you?
Oh, we got to have mashed potatoes. My mom's mashed potatoes. I mean, it's, I can do without a great deal, but I cannot do without those potatoes.
Do you mix in the
corn? I'm an Iowa boy at heart, so I grew up on the farm. I'm a meat and potatoes guy.
I love it. I know one of our traditions is to mix in the corn with the mashed potatoes, and I'm always flabbergasted by people that are repelled by that idea, but they've obviously have never tried that beautiful heavenly mix.
It's basically, it's a salad of a different kind. That's the way I think about it. It's nature's two most perfect carbs, corn and potatoes mixed together. There's going to be corn and mashed potatoes in heaven, guaranteed.
Absolutely.
Tofu, kombucha, not sure about those things, but corn and mashed potatoes, definitely.
Yeah, I definitely think kombucha is a bit of an angel of light thing where it sounds like it's good, but it actually deceives us into drinking it.
I'm with you on that, man.
It's Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com, joins us on Fridays and talks all things movies and video games, different music releases. And Adam, when we come back from break, there's quite a bit of hubbub about Bohemian Rhapsody. It was the best performing movie of last week. We didn't get a chance to talk about it. So let's do a review starting with that with Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com next on Faith Radio Mornings. Faith Radio Mornings on the 9th of November. We're about 9 minutes past the hour and already talking with Adam Holtz, who joins us on almost every Friday throughout the year to do movie reviews, video game reviews, all the things that are helpful for us as parents and as grandparents as we think about what we should expose our kids to and how to understand how to walk them through some of the different things in the movies. And Adam, we saw that last week Bohemian Rhapsody was quite a success at the box office.
Yeah, it made $50 million and the remarkable thing about that was not only did it exceed expectations, it didn't get great reviews. And it just goes to show that sometimes reviews aren't the be-all and end-all. And in this case, I think it was a story that connected emotionally with lots of us who grew up in the 70s and 80s. And I think there was just a curiosity factor about what are they going to do telling the story of Queen and its legendary lead singer, Freddie Mercury.
And in terms of Queen, I mean, for you and I, Adam, in our generation, I mean, that was one of the major bands. This is back in a time in which there wasn't just music from all sorts of musicians all over YouTube and one-hit wonders and stuff. This was really one of those bands that made a significant impact in our country.
No, that's exactly right. It's back at a time when we had something called rock and roll, which has mostly gone away now. But Queen was a band that, you know, maybe they weren't quite at the level of, say, U2 or the Rolling Stones, but certainly would be in the conversation for, you know, some of the greatest bands of all time. And this movie really tells the story. And, you know, there's a lot of Queen stuff that I kind of like. You know, I'm just going to confess that. There was a lot I did not know about this story. For example, Freddie Mercury was not born Freddie Mercury. He was born Farrokh Bulsara. His parents were Indian Parsis who actually immigrated from Zanzibar in Africa, and that's where Freddie was born. They moved to England when he was a teen. He was kind of an outsider. He had four extra teeth in his mouth, so his overbite has always been really pronounced. And in 1970, he met a band called Smile, and Brian May, the guitarist for Queen, and Roger Taylor, the drummer, were in that band, and their lead singer left. And Freddie stepped up to the plate and said, "Hey, I can sing." And everybody kind of laughed at him because he didn't look the part really of a rock star. But when he sang, he got the job. And in some ways, the rest is history. But the movie really chronicles the rise of Queen from 1970 to 1985. And it revolves around not only the story of the band, but Freddie meets a woman named Mary Austin, falls in love, actually proposes to her, but shortly after that really begins to feel the tug of same-sex attraction and acts out on that increasingly, and that kind of torpedoes their relationship. And Freddie's promiscuity is pretty legendary, but I think the thing that was really interesting to me about this movie was you just get the sense that this is a guy who really is longing for love. I mean, Queen had that song, Somebody to Love, right? And he's not finding that in the promiscuity and the lifestyle that he embraces. And so you get the sense that, you know, he's looking for love, but the way he's going about it isn't fulfilling to him. And at the end, he does end up with a partner that he's with the last few years of his life before he succumbed to AIDS in 1991. But I was kind of surprised at how, in some ways, the movie was pretty close to a cautionary tale in that respect, while giving us, you know, a lot of the music of Queen. And so content-wise, it dials it down to a PG-13. We see Freddie kiss a couple other guys. There's no mystery about what's going on, but it's certainly not at R-rated levels. And I think people who are interested in Freddie's story can enjoy that story without being totally bombarded with that kind of stuff. So it was kind of a surprise for me on lots of levels, actually.
So is this a movie, Adam, in terms of its success? Do you sense that it's mostly people maybe of my generation, our generation, that are going to it out of a sense of nostalgia? Are young people going to a movie? I don't hear a lot of buzz about Queen among my students.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how to answer that other than anecdotally. I mean, again, like you and I think there is a huge nostalgia factor. And the last 20 minutes of the movie, it culminates at the Live Aid performance in 1985. And, I mean, it was electrifying. What hair I have stood on end for 20 minutes. You know, the other interesting thing, though, I will say, my son, who's in seventh grade, when they go on field trips and they sing songs on the bus, they don't sing current stuff. They sing a bunch of stuff from the 70s and 80s, and Queen is in the mix. They sing Another One Bites the Dust and, you know, We Will Rock You and that sort of thing. And so at least anecdotally from what I know from my son, his generation is aware of them, which is kind of interesting to me how culture works. You know, it's kind of out there in the ether, and somebody's older brother passes it on to somebody, and soon kids are singing it on the bus again.
Well, certainly anecdotally in studio, Rachel was just typing me some notes. Rachel Sutton, she's 22 and said, I would not be shocked if my age people are going. Old things, Adam, old things are cool. So,
you know,
maybe there's still hope
you
even
and
as
I
we're old.
Old things. I hate to break it to you.
Yeah, we are indeed old things. It's Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com. We're talking about movies and different video games and TV shows that have been released. I see that there's a new Grinch movie that's coming out. I believe it's released today. Is that true, Adam?
That is right. And it's so rare, Peter, that I can come on and say, hey, if this movie looks good to you, go and see it. But this one actually fits that bill. It's a retelling of the Grinch Who Stole Christmas story, and they don't screw it up, which is remarkable. There's no extra bathroom humor imported. There's no foul language. There's no, you know, crazy sexual innuendo. All the things that sometimes happen when things get rebooted, they have resisted the temptation to put that in this story, and it's great if you're a fan of The Grinch. Now, personally, The Grinch scarred me when I was young. It kind of creeped me out, but I'm probably an outlier. So, but it's one that tells the story and, in the end, really emphasizes the importance of family, of friendship, of not being alone. And it's even got some honest-to-goodness Christmas carols that talk about Jesus, which I thought was kind of remarkable. So if your family's fans of The Grinch, go see it. I'm taking my family tonight.
Well, Adam, we'll be praying for hope and healing then as a result of the scarring of the Grinch from early in life.
Between that and Wizard of Oz, it took me a long time to sort of, you know, zigzag toward adulthood.
Absolutely. Those flying monkeys still appear in my dreams about once a year, I got to say.
Totally.
So we see that The Girl in the Spider's Web has been released as well. What is this movie about, Adam? I can't get a real feel from it from the trailers. I don't know if it's a psychological thriller, if it's a Silence of the Lambs, if it's an Avengers movie. What are we looking at here?
Well, it's the fourth book in Stieg Larsson's Girl and the Dragon Tattoo series, and actually he didn't write it. He died. Another guy wrote it. But it deals with the protagonist, Lisbeth Salander, and she's sort of a super hacker who is also got a same-sex predilection and wears a lot of black and has lots of piercings. It's not a superhero movie per se, but it kind of almost frames her as a super hacker hero as she battles some bad guys who are trying to get their hands on a nuclear program that will enable them to do bad things. So it's an action movie. It's a thriller. It's Jason Bourne on steroids with maybe more of a goth feel. But it's got a lot of R-rated content, Peter. I mean, there's a lot of sexual content here. There's violence. This is a dark, dark movie. It is accurately named. I mean, The Girl in the Spider's Web, you feel like, you know, anybody who sees this is going to come away feeling like there are sticky things clinging to their souls that probably aren't going to be very helpful.
Certainly sounds like one to avoid. Is this the Claire Foy of The Crown series on Netflix that's so popular?
Yeah, it's Claire Foy of The Crown series, and she is doing something decidedly less regal with this one.
It's Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com. Again, if you're listening this morning, it's a great site. I know you know it for a place to go for reviews. The right amount of depth without spoiling everything, giving us a sense of what we can expect if we take our kids and our grandkids to movies. And Adam, when we come back from break, we'll get out of Hollywood in that sense and maybe turn to some interesting blog posts on PluggedIn.com, including Parenting Generation Alpha. I didn't realize that the most recent generation has been named Alpha, but some really interesting things relative to their use of technology and what we can expect parenting the next generation. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here at 21 minutes past the hour, where I am talking with fellow old thing Adam Holtz about different things in movies and in music. And Adam, I think the only thing that maybe keeps me even on the edge of relevance is having some teenage kids in my home, and they sort of clue me into the music scene from time to time. And 21 Pilots with the album Trench seems to be sort of this trending thing, especially even among Christian teenagers.
Yeah. You know, 21 Pilots, they are an interesting band. It's two guys out of Michigan, and this is, I think, their fourth or fifth album. And they really sort of dig into some topics that are incredibly relevant today. The two guys in the band are Tyler Joseph and Josh Dunn, and Tyler has talked a lot about his struggles with depression and with the temptation of suicide, the interesting thing is I think that they don't really glorify those things. They talk about them as things to be, you know, resisted, to battle against. Both of them have talked about their Christian faith in the past, so they have that sort of in the mix, and you can pick up a subtle allusion to that here and there if you're listening closely, but they're not a Christian band in any sense of that word. But I think that they have what's on balance a pretty redemptive message, even as they talk a lot about struggle. And one of the things that's interesting is they have sort of this entire alternate universe that they have created with different characters, and you almost need a secret decoder key to figure out what they're talking about. It's, you know, you think about how back in the 70s bands started doing concept albums. They've had a concept career, and so each album builds on threads and ideas from some previous things they've done. So if you just put it on as a parent and are listening to it, you might scratch your head a little bit. It's like, I'm not exactly sure what's going on here. But there are these threads that pop up here and there that I think really do point to the fact that they are trying to move forward. Like, they have a song called Cut My Lip, and it says, though I am bruised, face of contusions, know I'll keep moving. Elsewhere in another song called Leave the City, they say, for now I will stay alive. And again, you could say, well, is the glass half full or half empty here? And that's a legitimate question. But I think these guys are really trying to deliver a message that's honest, a message that is ultimately hopeful, even though they tell the truth about some hard things. And I mean, they have a ravenous fan base. This band and Imagine Dragons are probably the two biggest rock bands out today, although neither one of them quite fit the rock descriptor the way we might think of it. And so I think if you've got a kid who's interested in this, definitely come to Plugged In and read our reviews and engage with them on why they like 21 Pilots and why they're connecting with it, because there's a lot of deep stuff going on here.
Well, I think it's fun, too, to review music like that as parents, because you can listen to an entire album and about half the time it takes to go review a movie and really get a sense of where the artists are coming from.
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing that, you know, back in the day, if you were a parent and you were concerned about what your kid was listening to, you had to sneak into his or her room and hope that the album liner notes had the lyrics on them. But now you can just type in 21 Pilots lyrics, and there'll be, you know, a dozen lyric sites that can tell you what's in these songs. So I think the internet really is a boon today for parents who want to be engaged. There's no reason, there's no excuse for not knowing what's going on, because it's all there. And the point is not to listen so that you can say, okay, this is garbage, we're not listening to this. But I think to have a window into your teen's world and to really engage with them on what is it that they're identifying with? What do they like? What's drawing them in? And I think music, more than movies, more than television, more than even video games, I personally think music is perhaps the most influential medium that we engage with, because we do it in bite-sized chunks over and over and over and over again. You know, I might have seen Star Wars hundreds of times, but my favorite albums I've listened to thousands of times. And so engaging with those messages with your kids is really important, because music is enormously influential in shaping our kids' worldviews and how they see things.
Yeah, it certainly has a capacity to somehow move past sort of our critical thinking and into our soul, as it should. But that does mean that as we engage in those levels, we need to kind of think about what we're letting in there. And Adam, we got a couple minutes left. I know that you've got a great recent blog post here that I'd recommend our listeners attend to, in which you address the fact that the most recent generation born since 2010 is called Generation Alpha. And one of your main points is that, unlike previous generation that adapted to technology, Alpha is growing up within an assumed world of technology. And that's going to make for some pretty interesting parenting conversations here for young families listening.
Yeah, it is. You know, we've been using this phrase digital natives for quite a while now, but in reality, it's these kids, the kids born since 2010, who are the real digital natives. They're growing up in a streaming environment where it's just normal to have whatever content they want, whenever they want it, on whatever device they have at hand. And even 15 years ago, even though the changes were accelerating, that wasn't true. And so as parents, we have the challenge of how do we cope with and set limits on and boundaries for this omnipresent world of functionally infinite content. I mean, we know in the biggest sense of things, it's not infinite. But as far as we're concerned, it may as well be. And I know I sometimes get overwhelmed by that. It's like, how do we do this? And so in the blog, I talk about some non-techie things that we can do that really can help ground our kids and develop relationship. And they're really concrete things, and they're so simple you might think, really? Is that really going to help my family? But they will. And so I talk about eating dinner together, helping your kids get to bed early and just getting enough sleep, really working to keep lines of communication and trust open, going to church. As old-fashioned as that sounds, taking your kids to church really does shape how they see the world. And then just going outside, go play football, go for a bike ride, disconnect from the screens. And none of those things are a silver bullet, but I think if we begin to integrate some non-techie things into the way that we relate to our kids, it really gives us more tools and more ability to shape how we, you know, form those boundaries as parents.
Yeah, and introducing contrast into their lives at a very early age so that they don't assume all things are screen or technology is a great starting point. Adam, we love having you on the program. You know that in terms of the reviews and the work that you do. Just remind our listeners again where they can go to see some of these reviews.
PluggedIn.com, and we review movies, music, television, video games, and pretty much anything that's hot in pop culture right now.
I love the work that you do, and I know in a couple of weeks Wreck-It Ralph will be coming out, and we're going to be seeing that the first night out. So next week, Adam, you got to give me a little take on Wreck-It Ralph.
We will do it.
Wonderful. Have a great weekend, and when we come back from Breakpoint and Bottom of the Hour News, we'll be joined by Chris Martin and talk about some of the realities that millennials are facing in our world today. Well, I guess I didn't realize there was a Toy Hall of Fame, but apparently there is, and the news out of the Hall of Fame there is that the Magic 8-Ball, the card game Uno, and the pinball machine will now occupy the Toy Hall of Fame. Since 1998, the Hall has inducted several notable toys that have had a large impact on child play, like Barbie, Play-Doh, and Crayola crayons, and the card game Uno was invented by an Ohio barber in 1971, changing family game nights everywhere. I have to say, I always get quite upset when I'm getting ready to play that last card and my son hits me with the big reverse and it goes the opposite direction. So congrats to Uno for making the toy Hall of Fame. Yesterday we had Ben Johnson on Faith Radio Mornings, and he was giving us some hope and healing in the midst of the tragedy in California.
12 people died in Thousand Oaks, California, including the gunman himself. A handgun was involved. And the only hope that we have in all of this is that Christ suffered. Christ suffered and died in the flesh. And that shows that Jesus is with us even in the most profound moments of our own suffering. When we lose our loved ones, He wept at the death of Lazarus. He was able to reverse that in the eternal resurrection. And in the universal resurrection, all of us will receive a new body. All of us will receive new life. And so that is the promise in Jesus Christ, that ultimately all things will work to the good. However, in the midst of our suffering, Jesus Christ wipes away every tear because he knows what it's like to have a broken heart over the death of a loved one. And anyone who's in those circumstances, in that situation, we always remember that Jesus Christ is walking with us, and he's walked before us and gone before us in the exact same emotional journey.
So grateful to Ben yesterday. He really found that place of authentic hope. It doesn't take away the tragedy or cause less grief. It just underpins all of that with a sense that it is not the only future that we have, that being pain and suffering, that someday all the tears will be wiped away. And if you want to catch all of what Ben had to say yesterday on the program, head to myfaithradio.com and search for Ben Johnson. It was a great segment with him. I see that we have regular contributor to the program, Chris Martin, who is part of the millennial generation, and he's going to be joining me next talking a bit about how we can handle and navigate the social media sort of environments in a way that would bring unity instead of fragmentation.
I'm not here to flatter your self-esteem, but Mom and Dad, there's no one quite like you. Hi, I'm Mark Grayston with Parenting Today's Teens. As a parent, no one can take your place. Dad, you can validate your child's value like no one else in the world. Your engagement with your daughter will likely determine the kind of man she'll marry. Your input in your son's life will shape his convictions and character. And mom, you instill a sense of value in your children. The way you nurture your son or daughter will help them show compassion to others. If God blesses you with children, He'll use you in remarkable ways to shape your child's life. And He'll equip you with everything you need to raise happy and healthy kids.
There's more from Mark Gregston on the Parenting Today's Teens website. Go to parentingtodaysteens.org.
Chris Martin of Coldplay we hear singing there. That means that the Chris Martin of the millennial generation and regular contributor here to Faith Radio Mornings is joining us. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I love having you on the program. I know that there's a little bit of a change in your life in terms of how you're covering topics and news for the millennial generation. Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, sure. So the last 4 years or so, I've been running a blog called millennialevangelical.com where I often posted helpful information about millennials or just kind of about their perspectives on the world in hopes of helping pastors or parents or other people who just are in some sort of social environment with millennials. And I did that for about 4 years, and it was really fun. And it was published a book around it and things like that. It was great. But I'm the student minister at our church now. I'm doing a lot more at work and just outside of work, kind of extracurricularly. So I decided it was time to shut down millennialevangelical.com, but I'm still very interested in studying what young people in particular, whether they're millennials or Gen Zers, you know, younger generations as well. And I'm still doing everything I can to help pastors or parents, especially through the ministry at my church, better understand how young people think and how that affects how they follow Christ. So, yeah, a bit of a shift there, but I'm still doing a lot of the same things. I'm just not regularly writing content on that side anymore.
Well, I love that, and I love what you sort of had to say a little bit about it in terms of it's a helpful medium to do blogging and stuff, but there's lots of ways to help, and in getting away from all of that, sort of this tyranny to have to be present all the time to monetize a website, it's got to be a bit of a relief.
Yeah, it is a lot of a relief, actually. Yeah, it was so fun to run it for a few years, and then the last 6-9 months, you know, since I started helping with the youth group toward the beginning of this year, it's just really been a burden. It's like, you know, I work all week. I do all my work on a laptop. I'm writing sermons for the youth group on a laptop. And then the last thing I want to do when I have a couple hours of free time is get back on my laptop and write a blog post for a couple thousand people to read. So I've been enjoying more of my free time away from a screen, especially away from my laptop. And so it's just, you know, it is really freeing, but I am doing everything I can to help people in the same way as I was before, just maybe not through that same medium.
Well, certainly you continue to follow so much of this, including what happens on social media. And Chris, I think it's an intriguing thought to think that Christians could be present in a unifying way on social media. It tends to be that a lot of us just avoid social media altogether because it is so polarized and so dominated by very extreme voices. What are some opportunities we might have as Christians to be engaged on social media and shine a different kind of light?
Sure. So I oversee, for my work at Lifeway Christian Resources, I oversee a website called Lifeway Voices, which is a platform for a bunch of our Lifeway authors and speakers or people whose books we just carry to write or record video content about things going on in the world today. So recently we hosted, just a couple weeks ago, shortly before the election, we hosted an article from Kelly Minter, who I'm actually going to get to spend time with today here at an event in Nashville. But she wrote an article. A lot of people may know her from her Bible studies or books. She wrote an article called How Christians Can Pursue Unity on Social Media. And some of these lines, I mean, you guys know me well enough to know that, I mean, I work in social media. I've studied social media a lot. And some of these lines just, like, hit me really hard. Like, one of these, she says, "It seems to me that the rise of social media has pushed people from a place of freedom of speech to duty of opinion." And that one just wrecked me because it's so true that many of us have misunderstood the freedom to be able to speak on what we want to this sort of duty or obligation to say what we think on everything. And they're not necessarily the same. And she goes on and she says, "I wonder what would happen if we cared more about righteousness than we care about ambition." And that's unfortunately what so much of what drives social media division and competitiveness, you know, ideological competitiveness on social media, which is what a lot of the argument argumentation comes from, so much of that is just fueled by ambition and pride and not righteousness or humility. And I think, you know, I think there are a number of practical ways that we can pursue unity on social media. I think one of the ones she shares right out of the chute in her blog post is just to share opinions less, right? And some people would say, well, if I shared opinions less, what would I even do? And that might be part of the problem. But I think we can see social media as more of a means of connecting with people and maybe sharing content we find interesting or encouraging, rather than just kind of spouting off, you know, trying to like have our own little talk radio show on social media where we think everyone's interested in what we have to say.
Well, and Chris, how much of this is sort of the fruit that's been born or the harvest that we've reaped as a result of planting all these seeds that everybody should have a voice, everybody should be empowered to have a voice, everybody should have an opinion, everybody has something to say. There's, I think, a lot of good in that. Obviously, people need to be empowered all the way across every board. But at the same time, if we're not careful, that could lead us into a sense that we don't listen anymore. And it's really only about our voice that matters.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think part of it is coming from that. And honestly, I think social media created that. Social media democratized attention, right? So in the past, in order to have people hear your opinion, you either had to be popular enough or influential enough to have your own like talk radio show or to have your own TV show or to have some sort of big platform, or you needed to have a group of friends who loved you enough to, you know, meet you at McDonald's in the morning and have breakfast and just talk about what your opinions were about the world. But nowadays you can have platforms similar to the size of some talk radio or talk show hosts on TV. You can have similar people who are nobodies can pursue similar sized platforms from the comfort of their own homes behind keyboards and screens. And yeah, it's a problem, but I think social media kind of created the problem as much as it sort of perpetuated the problem.
It's Chris Martin, who talks with us here regularly on Faith Radio Mornings about some of the things facing the current and next generations, especially related to technology and social media. And Chris, after the break, I'd love to follow up on that point a little bit, because not only did we democratize, as you said, the information, but then as we go look for information, we're fully empowered to go to look for those opinions that only we agree with. And that's part of the problem as well. So we'll talk about that next with Chris Martin about millennial and evangelical things here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings, where we're talking with Chris Martin about some of the different dimensions of life among the evangelical and millennial community. And Chris, we were talking before the break, you had a great phrase that was called the democratization of information, meaning that anybody who really wants to and has the wherewithal and creativity can have a voice in our world. And does that also set us up to say, hey, as individuals, I don't need to be beholden to certain news sources or voices of authority of any kind. I can go search out those people that I agree with most, and that leads to more polarization.
Yeah, I think that is very true. I think social media has amplified that. I don't think social media created that particular phenomenon, though, because people have searched out their own chosen, biased, for good or for ill, just has a particular angle, news sources for a while. MSNBC, CNN, and Fox News all existed before social media came about, and people, because of the different angles those organizations choose to cover the news, people have chosen which ones they're going to watch over time. And so I think social media, though, has simply just given more options to choose from when it comes from what opinions you want to listen to and decide are important. And I think the Facebook echo chamber, Facebook in particular, I think social media creates echo chambers. That's wrong. We create echo chambers on social media. It's wrong to blame social media for that. We use social media to create ideological echo chambers for ourselves so that we only have to read, listen to, or watch content with which we agree. And then when we come across content we don't like or don't agree with, that's when we begin to fight with others or talk about how terrible other people are or things like that.
Well, and certainly there are some sites out there we can go to that do get more extreme. And Chris, tell me, I saw something about a Gab website or media site, and I guess on this one I'm unfamiliar. This is new to me. Kind of talk us through. It looks like what is a new emerging right-wing kind of website.
Yeah, so Gab is a right-wing website, and by right wing, I don't just mean like Republican. I mean
right.
like most Republicans would probably repudiate the things that go on Gab. But it's used by white supremacists or other kind of far right wing extremist types as a social media platform. And as you know, I've only recently in the last few weeks really dug into what Gab is. I had heard of it before, but had never really studied it very deeply. And it was taken offline after the man who shot the people at the synagogue a couple weeks ago had been posting on there. It was taken offline by the people who were hosting it and things like that. And I obviously don't agree with Gab or the things that go on Gab. It's very problematic. And I've had friends who are semi-well-known Christians kind of be hurt through things that happen on Gab. It's not a good platform. But what's interesting when things like Gab happen, when Gab gets taken off the internet, let's say, or other platforms get taken off the internet, the question that's always asked is, who decides what's allowed to be on the internet and not be on the internet? Do we want the government to decide what's allowed to be on the internet and not be on the internet? Or do we want the individual corporations that decide to host the URL, host the servers for these organizations? Do we want them to decide if they have a right to be? And so what's always interesting when conversations around Gab come up or extremist websites of any kind that get taken down is how much is the line of quote-unquote extremism going to move? So every time we see a website get basically destroyed or taken down because no server company will agree to host it on their servers, we can applaud that because websites are evil and should not be allowed to exist, like Gab. But at the same time, that's because right now we as a culture have decided that that's what extremism is. And I think we need to be careful when these things happen to not solely praise these actions and say, yeah, websites like Gab shouldn't exist because they're extremists. Because the goal line or the goal posts on what is and is not extremism can change. And so we need to be careful to just decide that if society decides something is extreme, it deserves to be taken off the internet. Because that could turn bad quickly, depending on how quickly Christian views are deemed extreme sometime in the future.
Well, and certainly we see on Facebook that that's one of those conversations we're consistently having where they're trying to decide what they should censor and what they shouldn't. And, of course, there is some consternation that places like Facebook would get hacked by outside nations, maybe a place like Russia to influence our elections this past week. And Facebook has been pretty quiet in that. Chris, we've got a couple minutes left. Tell us a little bit about what's happening there.
Sure. So Facebook, everyone's kind of impressed that Facebook wasn't particularly overwhelmed with bad ads or deceitful ads from Russians or other organizations like they were in the 2016 presidential election. There were no major scandals this election season with Facebook, which I think caught everyone by surprise. Now, they did catch people running deceiving ads, in the month or two leading up to the election, but there was nothing right around the election where there was this massive influx of bad ads that were trying to deceive people, that telling them it was voting on the wrong day or things like that. So that was pretty remarkable. But one of the big problems for Facebook moving forward, for all social media platforms, but definitely Facebook, is that accountability is a problem. Facebook claims that it's accountable to various organizations or government agencies, but it has routinely declined to show up to various meetings with government agencies around the world. Recently, earlier this year, Mark Zuckerberg appeared before Congress in America. But other than that, they've really refused a lot of those things. So the question moving forward is going to be, who keeps Facebook accountable? Can we trust Facebook to keep itself accountable? I don't trust them to keep themselves accountable. But then how does that extend to other social media platforms? So that's definitely a concern that we're going to have around all social media moving forward into the near future.
Chris, we love having you on the program. We love your perspective, just what you bring to so much of the work around the millennial generation and help old people like me understand what's coming next down the pipeline. So just blessings on the continued work you're doing.
Thanks, man. Good to be with you.
We'll take a break here and wrap up our show for this week on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, as always, thanks for listening and being part of the journey here on Faith Radio Mornings as we fix our eyes on Jesus all throughout the week and the headlines and the topics of the day. And into the troubling headlines, of course, the shootings out of California. And I'm sure that those public headlines mirror what happens so often in our private lives with the suffering and the turmoil we're in. I will leave you for this weekend with words out of 2 Corinthians 1, in which Paul writes, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble as well." Blessings on the journey this weekend, and we'll catch you next Monday morning here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.